General, thank you very much for taking the time again to talk to me. Let's start with something which happened recently, that's a few days ago. You had U.S. infantry fighting vehicles parading along the Russian border. Was it a deliberate show of force?
We were invited by our NATO ally, Estonia, to participate in their Independence Day celebration in Narva. So we had 30 soldiers and four vehicles, a platoon, next to a Dutch platoon, a Spanish platoon, and a British platoon with Estonian soldiers there in Narva. So I don't think four vehicles with 30 soldiers, and if you saw the picture, there were children climbing in and out of the vehicle. I think you would really have to use your imagination to call that a show of force. The fact that a NATO nation, one of our allies, which is also an EU nation, invited us to be there is important to remember. I don't see how anybody could call that provocative. Germany celebrates its reunification each year with massive celebrations, fireworks, military parades. I don't think anybody sees that as provocative against Russia. So four vehicles. I mean, it's almost comical that that some have publicly called this a provocative act.
On the other hand, it doesn't happen that often that call it tanks or IFVs with the U.S. flag flying are that close to the Russian border. Will we see this whether on parade or in exercises more in the future?
Well, that's not nearly as dangerous as Russian aircraft violating the airspace of NATO nations, coming very close to aircraft of NATO countries, or buzzing ships like they did in the Black Sea. You know, even during the Cold War, it was a common thing that, you know, Russian aircraft, NATO aircraft would get close to each other, ships would follow each other. But there was sort of an accepted protocol between professional airmen, for example, Soviet as well as Western, that there was a way to do this without risk. And what Russian aircraft are doing now is extremely risky, unprofessional, that could very easily lead to an accident. There's no way that four armored vehicles that are wheeled, they're not tanks, these are wheeled armored vehicles, that presents any kind of a threat to anybody. But for sure, if one of our allies invites us to participate in an Independence Day, well, of course we're going to support that.
You mentioned the near incidents along the NATO airspace. Are there similar observations on the ground, or is everything quiet on the ground?
Well, inside NATO countries, I haven't personally seen it, although during the Zapad exercise, which is the big Russian exercise they do every year, they routinely violated the Lithuanian border. For example, armored vehicles would cross into Lithuania as part of the exercise. Not a long ways, but they would do things that really disrespect the sovereignty, and it's part of their method of intimidation, putting pressure on these smaller countries.
So these last Zapad exercises were, if I remember correctly, one or more year ago. If something like that, like a minor incursion into NATO territory, would happen today, would there be a different situation as given in early 2014, 2013?
I think it would just be seen as another example of what Russia continues to try to do, to try to create instability along its border, to intimidate. Russia knows that the United States will honor its Article 5 obligation, without a doubt. So hybrid warfare is all about, the Russian style, is all about keeping the temperature below 100 grad.
Below cooking.
Yes. So 90, 95 degrees. So that it's not an obvious Article 5 situation. And so what we have got to do, the alliance has got to stick together. We have got to work hard to continue to assure allies that we will be there. We, all of us, that's what NATO is all about, Article 5, collective defense. Continue to exercise, continue to improve our capabilities and interoperability. And that's what really was so remarkable about the Wales Summit, was in two main themes. Number one, assurance. And so that's why you have British, Dutch, and Spanish soldiers in Estonia as well as Americans. That's why you have German soldiers participating in exercises with 12 other nations in the Baltics and in Poland this year. These exercises are going on. So that assurance was a part. The second theme was adaptation, the readiness action plan, which created the VJTF. And thankfully, Germany is going to play a leading role in the first iteration of the VJTF, the Very High Readiness Joint Task Force, to change Multinational Corps Northeast to a full-time 24/7 Article 5 headquarters oriented on early indicators and warnings about what Russia might do, and Germany being a framework nation for Multinational Corps Northeast and stepping up its effort there in leadership, I think is a great example of the adaptation that the alliance agreed to. The creation of the NFIUs, the NATO Force Integration Units, that'll be in each of the countries along the eastern flank of NATO. This was a decision by 28 nations to agree to do this. I think that's very important. And so that's what I focus on.
Let me get a step back. Everybody, or at least in Germany, quite a lot of people are afraid that there might be misunderstandings in the airspace, at sea, and maybe even on land, when Russian forces come pretty close to the borders, or even by mistake or by purpose enter NATO territory. Are there safeguards in place to prevent that such a situation gets out of hand?
Well, I think that the safeguard is having well-trained, well-disciplined forces, having indicators and warnings capability, intelligence capability, that will help make sure we don't have a misunderstanding. You remember, Russia was invited to, was represented in NATO with the joint NATO-Russia Commission. They had representation there. Whenever we did big exercises, you could have Russian
observers,
just like you could have NATO observers at Russian exercises. I mean, we've had these protocols in place for a long time, so we ought to be able to avoid that kind of a misunderstanding. That's why I think it's concerning that Russian airplanes, aircraft, are being risky in what they do, flying too close to ships, too close to allied aircraft. But I think, I know that our soldiers in NATO are so disciplined. And besides, these nations have border security forces, and so the military is behind the border security forces, that something like that, I think, would be unlikely to cause a misunderstanding.
But there are no direct lines, as I understand, between both sides anymore?
There are. Not all of the ones that we used to have, but clearly there are lines that are open.
So still there is communication, yeah. Let's say, between you and your Russian counterpart?
Not between me and my counterpart, no. But I am confident that there are, at the right places at this particular time, there's communication still open.
Okay. Let's come to the situation in Germany. You are in Berlin. You are visiting German training grounds, German commands, German facilities. We have a discussion going on here about the strengths and the material situation of the armed forces in Germany. From point of the U.S. commander on the ground based in Germany, what's your take on the current situation of the German armed forces?
First of all, the German army continues to be one of the absolute best in the world in terms of the quality of officers, the quality of soldiers, and non-commissioned officers, Unteroffizieren. The equipment, you know, was exceptional for the Army. The German Army training facilities, first class. So I am very confident in the capability of the German Army itself.
Despite reports on helicopters not flying and things like that?
What I have seen is an improvement in the willingness of Germany to participate in multinational exercises. What I have not seen is the investment in the lift, the airlift, the aviation part of what a modern military should do. Germany is a leader. We, the alliance, the United States, wants to see Germany step forward to reassume a prominent leadership role in the military the way it is economically and politically. So I'm not an expert on aviation, so maybe my Air Force counterpart could be a better expert. But it is it's worrisome to see that the most powerful nation in Europe is having challenges with aviation maintenance. But I can speak for the Army, and the fact that the Army intends to increase the number of tanks that it'll have, the work that it is doing with the Dutch, for example, and with the French and the British, as well as the U.S., and with Poland, these are all very positive signs. I hope it continues. I think the leadership of Frau von der Leyen is very important, and it feels like it's turning in the right direction. Multinational Corps Northeast in Szczecin, Germany is a framework nation. An increase in the German contribution to that headquarters. So the U.S. is also going to increase its contribution there because Germany is willing to do it also. So I see positive signs, but, you know, for the most powerful nation in Europe, economically, it has an important leadership responsibility. I think that the military investment, you know, Germany committed to 2% of its GDP just like everybody else did. I think they have to live up to that.
Now, Germany is increasing training this year compared to the years before. Is this on a level which you consider satisfactory?
In terms of the trajectory, yes. More soldiers this year than I've seen in a long time in multinational exercises. That's very important. I hope that I would like to see more German headquarters, you know, at the brigade level, the division level, leading in the exercises. I would be very happy to put hundreds, thousands of American soldiers, not hundreds of thousands, I don't have that, but to put American soldiers under any level of German command for exercises. I want my soldiers to have the opportunity to train with our German ally, to be under a German command, under a NATO command. That's how we're going to fight. We're never going to fight alone. And I think if Germany steps forward to take its a leadership role that it should take, I will be with them every step of the way.
You mentioned the increase or the intention to increase the number of tanks. Now, given not only the German potential, but NATO overall has only a fraction of the tanks it used to have 30 years, 40 years ago. It's, how do you regard these figures? It's a tenth of the force of old. Is there is this anything which is usable at all, or is it just for the record that you have some tanks, or how do you consider this?
Keep in mind, number one, these are the best tanks in the world. The U.S. Abrams tank, the German Leopard.
Last time you mentioned only the Abrams. Okay.
Well, I'm sitting next to... I've said they... These are the two best tanks. Abrams is still the best, but right behind it is the Leopard 2. But seriously, you're talking about the best tanks in the world. So the quality, you don't need the same number of tanks that we had maybe 30 years ago. You know, the capability of the Russians or any other adversary is not in the numbers of the old days in the Cold War when you had tens of thousands of tanks. So warfare has changed. But still, every infantry soldier I know wants to have a tank close by because it has the protection, the firepower, the technology to see. It's an incredible, and as you saw in Iraq and Afghanistan, tanks, even in that sort of a conflict, can still be very effective in a city, in a close combat, even in a counterterrorism type environment, counterinsurgency. It still is an important thing. So the numbers of tanks are less important to me. The quality, the training, and the interoperability is what matters the most to me.
So the number is, well, satisfactory? Or?
No, it's not satisfactory. We definitely need more. There's no depth. The Dutch, I'm very happy to see that the Dutch have decided to integrate Germany and Netherlands together. You know, we'll have a mixed battalion so that the Dutch, who at one time had a huge number of tanks, you know, are now going to recapture some of their capability. I think that's very important. The British have a good tank capability also. You know, the U.S. has no tank unit that's permanently stationed in Germany anymore, but we are now rotating units from the States that will use tanks that are pre-positioned here.
Stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, if I remember, I'm also from the generation which lived through the Cold War and had the impression that there was a certain threshold and a lot of conventional forces on both sides which made a nuclear war much less likely, because before that there would have been a lot of conventional fighting. Now the conventional forces, especially on the western side, have been reduced significantly. So is the threshold for a nuclear fighting lower than it has been during the Cold War?
I don't know that the threshold is different. I mean, the outcome of any sort of a nuclear exchange is still is as horrible as it ever would be, regardless of how many conventional forces you had. So I don't make that connection. I think it is important that that all sides to the various agreements need to live up to what they have agreed to. That you continue the various verification protocols. It is worrisome that Russia conducts exercises where there's a scenario includes a nuclear strike on a NATO country. I don't think that's appropriate. This is why the alliance has got to stick together, and the EU has got to stick together to make sure that Russia knows that this is unacceptable behavior if you're serious about peace and stability in Europe.
General, thanks a lot for your time.
Thomas, good to talk to you again.